You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Best Supporting Actor of the Week podcast. Today we are going to learn about the Mieldot, Shifra v'Pua, the midwives who make an appearance in the first chapter of the Book of Shemot. Now, these two women, right, are clearly minor secondary characters. Their story takes up all of seven psukim, and we never hear about them again. But their story is important, both in terms of what they did and what they come to symbolize. A little background: Bnei Israel are down in Egypt. They multiply, thereby raising the concern of Paro, who is concerned that somehow they're going to take over the country. He enslaves them, hoping that the terrible conditions of slavery would lessen their numbers, but their numbers keep growing. And so Paro changes his tactics. And then, starting in Pasuk Tedvav, we read, Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim, Lamialdot Ha'ivriot. Melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, says to the midwives, Asher Shem Ha'achat Shifra, V'Shem Hashenit Pua, right? The names of these two midwives, who were the midwives of the Ivriot, of the Hebrew women. Their names were Shifra and Pua. Vayomer biyaledchen eta Ivriot uriten al haovnaim im benhu v'hamiten oto v'im bati v'chaya. Right, when you are helping the women give birth, and you look and you see the child that is born, if it is a boy, kill him, and if it's a girl, let her live. Vatirena hamiyodot et haElohim velo asu kasher diber lehem melech Mitzrayim. These miyodot, these midwives, were God fearing, and therefore they did not do what Paro had told them to do. Vatchayena taYeladim, and they kept the boys alive. Vayikra Melech Mitzrayim lamiyaldot, vayomer lahen, madu asiten hadavar hazeh vatechayena taYeladim. Why did you do this? Paro says to them. Why did you keep alive the boys? Vatomar na hamiyaldot el Paro, ki lok chanashim hamitzriot haivriot ki chayot hena, v'terem tavo alehen hamiyaldot vayaladu. Right, so they give an explanation, whether this is true or not, whether the Ivriot, the Hebrew women, were like this or not, I don't know. But their excuse in all cases is that the Ivriot women are not like the Egyptian women, and they are able to give birth easily by themselves. Right, this might be connected to their very high birth rate, which we hear about at the beginning of this parak. And therefore, by the time we came to them, right, they had already given birth. In other words, we didn't have an opportunity to do what you asked us. Vayetev Elohim lamiyaldot, right? Hashem, God, was good to the miyaldot, rewarded them. Vayirev ha'am vayatzimu me'od. And the people, Am Yisrael, became even greater. Vayhi ki yaru hamiyaldot et Elohim vayas lahem batim. Because the miyaldot had been God-fearing, Hashem provided for them households. What exactly households refers to isn't the topic of today's podcast, but in all cases they were given a reward by God. Now, what exactly did these miyaldot do? So if you look back at pasuk Yudzain, right, it says velo asu kasher diber lehem melech Mitzrayim vatechayena taYeladim. They didn't do what Paro told them, and they kept the boys alive. The Mefarshim look at that double language velo asu vatechayena and try to understand if these are talking about two different things or it's just saying basically the same thing twice. So Rashi, for example, interprets vatechayena et hayeladim misapkot lahem mayim umazon, meaning not only did they not kill the boys, but they also provided for them water and food. In other words, they not only didn't do something bad, they also did something good. They did something to actively help them. The Ibn Ezra says Vatechayena Bechol Kochan Yoter Mimishpat HaRishon Kimat Tzorech Haya La'arich. Right, so the Ibn Ezra agrees, right, that the word Vatechayena has to add something, otherwise why is it there, but he doesn't understand it as a particular item or items like Rashi says, rather that it just emphasizes that they did it bechol kochan, with all of their might, right? They were very, very active and tried very hard to do what they had to do to keep the boys alive. Regardless of which interpretation you go by, what the Meir Yaldot did was unquestionably heroic. The Torah explains that the Mialdot were God-fearing, right? Vatirena ha-Mialdot et ha-Elohim. The guiding force, according to the Torah, behind their actions was a fear of God. Now, fear of God is a very important term in the Torah, one which appears in a number of different contexts. So, for example, in the recounting of the Battle of Amalek, in Sefer Dvarim, right, where we are told, you know, Zachor v'tasher asa lecha Amalek, right, where the mitzvah of always remembering what Amalek did is given. It describes there Zachor v'tasher asa lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you when you left Mitzrayim. Asher korcha b'derech v'yizanev b'cha kol anechashalim acharecha v'ata ayefi yageya. Right. What they did when you left Egypt, when you were tired and you were weary, right? Velo yirei Elokim, and were not God fearing. Now there's a whole, exegetical debate about that last part. Velo yirei Elokim, were not God fearing. Is that referring to Bnei Israel? They were not God fearing, or Amalek? And there are different interesting opinions back and forth on this issue. It seems that according to the simplest pshat, Velo yirei Elokim refers to Amalek. Right, the Amalekim who attack from behind, who attack the tired and the old and the sick and the weak, they are defined as not being God fearing. Similarly, the term appears in the context of certain mitzvot. Right, lo tikalel cheresh v'lifnei iver lo titein michshol v'yareitem elokecha ani Hashem. Right, don't curse a deaf person, don't put a stumbling block before a blind person, and you should fear God. I am God, right? Or mipnei seva takum v'hadarta pnei zaken, you should get up for an old person, right? V'yareta melokecha, right? These are laws which safeguard vulnerable individuals, which require us to act morally towards those of whom we could easily take advantage. These are laws which are enforced by Yirat Elokim. People who do the right thing, even when they can get away with doing otherwise, are God-fearing people. Right? That's what the context of this idea of Yirat Elokim explains over and over again. Those people who take advantage of others, particularly take advantage of others' vulnerabilities, right? These people are not Yirat Elokim, are not God-fearing. In the story of the Mialdot, right, what could be more vulnerable and easily abused than a newborn baby? These babies who were sentenced to death by Paro. So it was Yirat Elokim that guided the Mialdot, right, to save these babies, right, who were not only vulnerable as babies, don't forget they were also slaves, which made them all the more vulnerable. And it's the Yirat Elokim that guides the Mialdot to protect these very small potential victims, to be Yirei Elokim instead of Yirei Paro. Right? They fear God instead of fearing Paro. When confronted by the Paro, the Mialdot simply say it wasn't in their control. Right? The Hebrew women were able to give birth easily on their own, right? And hence they could not kill the babies. Right? They don't say, "Oh, we are God fearing." That's not something how they describe themselves. It's the Torah, the objective, so to speak. Commentary of the Torah that describes them in that way. Now that is basically the story of the Mialdot. There is one more question about the Mialdot, however, which depending on how one answers it, can change significantly our understanding of these actions of the Mialdot, which we just read about. And this question has to do with their identity. Who were they? The more common answer is that they were Hebrews themselves. They were Ivriot. The Rashbam on Pasuk Tedvav, right, Hamialdot HaIvriot, La miyadot shehen ivriot. Right? What does the phrase miyadot ha-ivriot mean? The midwives who were ivriot. Meaning that according to the Rashbam, the word ivriot modifies the word miyadot. The midwives themselves were ivriot, were Hebrews. Right? Rashi, who follows the Midrash, is basically following the same understanding when he says that the miyadot, who are called Shifra and Pua in the Torah, were really Yocheved and Miriam, right? The mother and sister of Moshe, who of course were Ivriot. Another opinion, however, states that the midwives were not Ivriot, but rather they were the Mialdot Ivriot, meaning the midwives of the Hebrews, Mialdot Eta Ivriot, those who would deliver the Hebrew women. This interpretation is bolstered partially by the phrase later on in the story, "Biyaletchen eta ivriot," right, which speaks where Paro is speaking to these miyadot, where he refers to the ivriot almost as others, right. It's also possibly strengthened by speculation that Paro would probably have been less likely to assign Hebrew women the task of killing Hebrew babies. He could possibly say that he would imagine that he would have better luck with this with Mitzriot. Now, whether the Me'aldot were Ivriot or Mitzriot, Hebrew women or Egyptian women, changes not only the facts of the story, it changes how we understand what they did. Now, regardless of whether they were Mitzriot or Ivriot, right, the Me'aldot seem to have acted out of a conviction that Paro's decree was simply evil, was wrong, and therefore it should not be heeded. And that seems to remain the same regardless of their national identity. However, if the Mialdot were Ivriot, then they had the additional incentive of a certain nationalistic loyalty towards these babies, and a feeling that they must do something for Am Yisrael. Right? Am Yisrael are slaves. Am Yisrael in a very precarious situation when this decree is made by Paro. And so these Mialdot, if they were Ivriot, certainly had nationalistic reasons to want to save these babies. Their bravery is enhanced in this case, in this scenario, by the fact that they were slaves themselves. Right? Paro would certainly have not thought twice about killing them for their defiance if he wanted to. Because they're slaves, after all. Additionally, as slaves, right, being slaves themselves, these Mialdot probably had very meager means of protecting or providing for these babies. They were not very empowered, these women, if they were indeed Ivriot. And therefore, all the more so, their behavior indicates a tremendous amount of bravery and determination. So in this case, right, if the Mialdot were Ivriot, Yirat Elokim could be defined as the determination to stand firm against a strong and immoral enemy, right? And to have the belief and the willingness and the ability to do this, right? To stand up against something that is wrong, even under very, very, very difficult circumstances. If, on the other hand, the Mialdot were Mitzriot, Egyptians, then we understand their motivation very differently, right? On the one hand, they were probably more empowered, right? They were free women, and therefore perhaps in more of a position to help these babies. But nevertheless, they, who weren't in danger at all, right? They weren't slaves, no decrees were being made against them. They endangered themselves to help these children of a completely different nation, right? Who were slaves, no less, right? Simply because it was the right thing to do. And I say that they endangered themselves because, despite the fact that they were not slaves, right, and were not therefore as cheap as the Ivriot might have been, chances are that Paro would be likely to punish or kill, if he so chose, anyone who disobeyed him. Right, it probably wouldn't matter if they were Mitzriot or Ivriot in that instance. But in the absence of a nationalistic motivation, their motivation was purely moral and ethical. They had nothing personal to gain, nothing personal at risk. They were simply against the evil of the decree. So in their case, I would say that Yirat Elokim means simply standing up for what's right against an immoral action or decree, right? Even if that decree comes from the king or for some other great power, right? Recognizing evil for what it is, regardless of its source. And perhaps to add, and regardless to who it's being done against. So I think that considering these two different possibilities can significantly change how we appreciate what they did and why they did it. Although, if you want to try to understand it even a little bit more, although the situations might not be 100% parallel, an analogy of the difference between whether these mi'aldot were mitzriot or ivriot might be, a good analogy might be how we understand the bravery of a non-Jew who saved Jews during the Shoah, and how we compare that to a Jew who saved other Jews during the Shoah, right? And in most ways, I think these two scenarios are similar to each other. I think that the significance of understanding these two possible readings of the Mi'aldot goes even further, right, than simply understanding this story. The Mi'aldot, who again appear at the very beginning of Sefer Shemot, are something of a template for numerous others who show up in the continuation of this story. If the Mi'aldot were Egyptian, right, then their actions are very similar to that of Bat Paro, who, as we well know, saved one very significant Ivri baby, right? Moshe, of course. And if we understand the actions of the Mi'aldot properly, this can also help us understand the greatness of what Bat Paro did, right? And what her motivation for doing what she did was. Alternatively, if the Mi'aldot were Ivrim, then they were similar to Yocheved and Miriam, who also saved Moshe at a different point in the same story. No doubt, those who say that the Mi'aldot were, in fact, Miriam and Yocheved, right, we're aware of these parallels. We're aware of these similarities. And a comparison of the efforts of Moshe's mother and sister to save him to the efforts of the Mi'aldot is also informative. Right, helps us understand both Yocheved and Miriam better, as well as the Mi'aldot. I'd like to take this even one step further. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was in many ways part Ivri and part Mitzri, right? He is Ivri. He is born to an Ivri family. He becomes the leader of the Ivrim later on. But for a pretty significant part of his upbringing, he was brought up as a Mitzri, in the palace, no less. He very significantly, in terms of the study that we're doing here today, was a son both to Yocheved, right, together with, you know, being Miriam's sister on that side, and also the son of Bat Paro, right? These two sets of women who saved him, who acted and did very heroic things on his behalf. And so he very much was both part of this Ivri family and also part of this Mitzri family. Now, before Hashem spoke to Moshe at the Sneh, at the burning bush, how did he identify? How did he self-identify? To what degree did he know that he was an Ivri? To what degree did he identify an Ivri if he knew that he was an Ivri? When he killed the Mitzri in order to save the Ivri, when he first starts going out and seeing what's going on with the Ivri slaves, was he doing that as an Ivri or as a Mitzri? Did he save the Ivri because he identified with the Ivri and it was for nationalistic reasons, in addition to, of course, the ethical moral reasons? Or was he doing it as simply a moral human being who couldn't stand for what that Mitzri was doing when he was hitting the Ivri? And what does each of these possibilities say about Moshe, right? If we understand the stories of Moshe according to one or according to the other, what does it say about him? Because, to take it one step further, because of the parallels between the Mi'aldot and Bat Paro on the one hand, and between Yocheved Miriam and the Mi'aldot on the other, one can also wonder, right, to what degree was Moshe a product of both of his mothers, right? Now I'm going to leave you to ponder and to investigate these questions. I promise that if you look carefully at all of the relevant psukim and try to answer all of these questions, it could be very fruitful. It could be very interesting in terms of trying to understand what all these parallels are supposed to mean, how we're supposed to understand Moshe, what Moshe became, etc. But even with just the questions which I've just asked, we can catch a glimpse at the importance of the Me'al Dot as paradigms for some pretty significant people at the beginning of Sefer Shemot. But since we're also talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, a pretty significant person for the rest of the Torah. And to take it even one step further, we discussed how Yirat Elokim is a very important idea, which shows up in many different parts of the Torah, right? An idea which is not only an idea, an ideal. It is one of the main goals of the Torah, that we should all be Yirei Elokim. And this is an idea which appears here in this story of the Me'al Dot, in the story of Shifra and Pua first, right? So if that's the case, then the Me'al Dot are templates not only of some pretty key figures in the biblical narrative, but they're also role models, regardless of whether they were Ivriot or whether they were Mitzriot. They're role models for all people who study Torah, right, and try to fulfill its teachings and try to live according to its message.